Welcome to the Student Pilot Podcast. My name is Simon Callis, a flight school owner. Each week, myself and my guests will be talking all things flight training and beyond to help inspire, motivate and support you on your journey to becoming a private or commercial pilot. So welcome to the podcast, everybody. This week we have aircraft engineer, airline pilot, aviation consultant and now published author Steve Ford on the show. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem at all. So, wow, what an interesting and broad career you have. It's great. Can we go back to the beginning, though, and just tell us where it all began, where your interest came with aviation?
Yeah, certainly. I think, to be honest, it was my father. I grew up in an aviation environment.
Yeah.
My father was an engineer, aircraft engineer, mm-hmm. and he became a flight engineer. And his first employment was with Caledonian Airways, an airline in the UK, with DC-7s, Britannias, Boeing 707s, and he eventually ended up on the DC-10 as a flight engineer.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you grew up around all this stuff, right?
Absolutely. So my early recollections are of being handed from station engineer to station engineer around the planet. In those days, the aircraft were used primarily for charter, mm-hmm. for moving either cargo or troops or inclusive tour holidays. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a child, my brother and I being handed to a crew in Southend to fly on a Britannia down to East Africa, which was empty, and we just played football up and down an empty aeroplane.
Wow. Can you tell us your first job was engineering, is that right?
What happened was, obviously I grew up in that environment, and I started as an engineering clerk at Gatwick Airport. Mm-hmm. And from that, it was pretty obvious to me pretty quickly that I wanted to be involved in aviation hands-on.
Yeah.
Managed to get an apprenticeship with the British Caledonian Airways, mm-hmm. and served a full apprenticeship with them, which allowed me to gain engineering licenses. And what I did, because of the ability to travel to the States, I made sure I gained an American A&P qualification as well as British airframe and engine licenses.
Yeah.
And that allowed me to progress within engineering.
Okay. So at this point, your flight training journey hadn't yet started. Can you tell us when that did start and in what form?
Yeah. So it was, again, being in that environment, I wanted to fly, and the opportunity presented itself to start taking lessons in the UK. That was at Shoreham, which is down on the south coast, and in those days there was no paved runway, so it tended to flood. Mm. So when I started my flying lessons, I was still serving an apprenticeship as an engineer, and quickly I found it challenging with Shoreham, Goodwood and Red Hill constantly in the winter being flooded out.
Yeah.
So I had to find a solution, and the solution was an unusual one. It was Long Beach, California.
Tell us about that then. So you moved out there to...
Yes. So the way I managed to work it was because I had access to airline concessions.
Yeah.
I literally used my vacation time, worked in pubs and bars, saved every penny I could, and then took blocks of time in Long Beach. I actually stayed in an engineer's Winnebago on his driveway and gained my private pilot's license in Long Beach.
Excellent.
Returned to the UK and then transferred that to a British private pilot's license. Mm-hmm. And then the next obvious step was to take a share in an aeroplane and start to building up some experience.
Okay. And then you moved on through UK multi and IR?
Yeah, so I did it in stages. So what I did was I realized that I wanted to pursue flying commercially. And even though I had a very, very good job with British Caledonian as a power plant development engineer, I quit, which was a brave thing to do at the time. And it was the right thing to do at the time for me personally. And I spent the next 3 years backs and forwards to Texas in order to gain a multi-engine IR. I became a CFII instructor, instrument as well, and multi-engine instrument instructor. That was fantastic because what it did was it allowed me to gain experience on a variety of aircraft. That included Cessna 182s, Beech Barons mainly, 55 Barons and 58 Barons, and the opportunity to get my hands on King Air C90.
Oh, wow. Excellent. And then, so moving on from there, can you tell us about your first pilot job?
Yeah, so the first commercial job was when I was back in the UK. Obviously, I had to convert to British CAA licenses and had to do all of that over again. So the ground school was all done at Cass College in London. Mm-hmm. And I was actually here at Coventry with Atlantic Flight Training.
Oh, wow.
Doing the instrument rating. Excellent. And multi-engine on their Cessna.
Yeah.
At the time, the 310 that they had.
Yeah.
That allowed me to then have the qualifications to start looking for employment.
Excellent.
So to answer your question, I had a bit of an advantage, and it's something to bear in mind, certainly for students, when they're going through their training and their courses, if they want to go commercial. If they can gain experience and hours in their logbook on twin-engine aircraft, grab it.
Yeah.
Because what it did was it allowed me to knock on doors, not just with a license in my hand, but experience, 3 years of experience of flying twins. And I literally knocked on hangar doors. You know, we've got the internet, we've got all sorts of mechanisms now to apply for jobs, but you can't beat the old-fashioned
I think that stands out now, doesn't it? But if people take a more direct approach over just emailing like everybody else would, I think that does make you stand out.
And also, it's about timing. I'm a great believer in the law of timing. None of us know what's around the corner. And I knocked on a hangar door on a Friday, the day that one of their pilots had resigned to join Air Europe.
Right.
And I started with that company at Biggin Hill, a company called Shore Wings, on the Monday. They had King Air Beech 350, which I flew as a first officer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know when I had my interview, but I did the day I joined. They also had citations, and they quickly put me on a citation course.
Wow.
And within months, I was then on to citation ones and twos, which then gave me jet time.
Yeah.
And that then allows you to start to build that experience base. And it takes a lot of energy and effort. There's a lot of work that goes into type ratings, but it pays off because it shows to the next employer that you're prepared to put that energy and effort into something, and you're worth betting on because you're capable of getting through the course.
So tell us about how your career progressed then from Shore Wings, because you've got a real vast experience there on various different aircraft. So if we can go through how it sort of progressed up until your last job in aviation.
Yeah, so what happened was Shore Wings was going through some challenges, and it eventually closed down. And I could see that it was time to move and see what opportunities were there. And fortunately, there were. I joined Novair International, which was a charter inclusive tour operator. And I joined as a first officer on the 737-400. Mm-hmm. I then converted onto the DC-10.
Nice.
It was lovely for 30 days because the airline closed.
Oh, no.
I did my base training in Shannon on a DC-10 on the 21st of March, and on the 31st of March, the airline closed.
Mm.
So that's another lesson in this industry, that you will have knocks.
Yes.
You will get to a point where you think, why me? Why has that happened? Well, sadly, that's life, and that's the industry we're in. There are changes that you have to adapt and work with. So what I did was I applied to various companies, and the opportunity presented itself to fly and work for British Aerospace.
Mm-hmm.
British Aerospace at that time was a commercial aircraft division, and I was hired to work on the Hawker program, the 125s, the 800 and the 1000. Mm-hmm. British Aerospace trained me to do production flight tests because of my engineering and flying qualifications. That was mainly out of Harden, Chester. The development flight test on the 1000 was at Woodford.
Mm-hmm.
Woodford is near Manchester. And from that, it then allowed us to work on a demonstration program where we took the aircraft worldwide, demonstrating in all four corners.
So all that aviation engineering experience you had led you into a new opportunity, effectively.
Yes, and if anyone is listening who has other strings to their bow, whether it be flight operations experience, ground handling, anything within the industry that is in addition to your flying skills will often come into play when it comes to opportunities. So because I had the engineering background and a flying qualification and experience, it didn't mean I was any better than anyone else, and far from it. But what it did do was it opened opportunities and doors for me to work both sides of the fence.
Yes.
So with British Aerospace, I worked on some of the certification programs and worked with the FAA and Honeywell on some avionics. And from that, I was then able to progress. Raytheon took over British Aerospace Corporate Jets. The opportunity to move to the United States was there, but I chose to join an airline with big red engines.
Fair enough. and with them, what aircraft were you type rated on with them?
So Virgin Atlantic is obviously who we're talking about for those that haven't picked up on that. I was with Virgin Atlantic for 23 years. Mm-hmm. And I, again, because of my engineering background, was asked to be the technical pilot initially on the A340.
Yeah.
And I flew the A320, A330, A340. I was also fortunate enough, as a result of the work with Airbus as a guest of theirs, to fly the A380 on the Boeing fleet. I flew as captain on the 747-100, 200 and the 747-400.
Wow. It's a real range of aircraft.
Well, there was a few courses, a lot of training.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't have a training file, I had a filing cabinet.
Yeah, absolutely. So after 23 years then, what was it that made you think, do you know what, I don't want to do commercial anymore?
Well, I think in life, we get to a point when we recognise that it's the right time to make a change. And it wasn't a change that was forced upon me. The airline industry is very volatile. I was fortunate to survive redundancies and changes within the industry when major events took place, like 9/11, SARS, which was the forerunner to COVID, the volcanic ash in Iceland.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very challenging industry to work in as much as it's very susceptible to change. So if there's a global event that impacts it. And the change that I chose to make was a personal one, in as much as I have and had a fantastic aviation career. In parallel, I did have other commercial interests within aviation. We operated an FBO, which I enjoyed. I also kept very much hands-on with general aviation.
Yes.
General aviation has, throughout my career, been the core, really, in as much as I restored aircraft, various aircraft, Moonies, Barons, a Beech Sundowner not so long ago, and recently a PA-28.
Which we've now using, so it's a lovely aircraft, it really is.
But to answer your question, Simon, it was a personal decision. I think people get to a point where they decide what's best for them and their family.
Yeah.
I made the choice. I've got no regrets. I've no regrets at all. Yeah. It was the right thing to do at the right time.
Yeah, I think that with any career, you sort of get to a point where you think, I've had my best out of this now and I want a new challenge a lot of the time.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't burnt out. I still have I think we all have a fire in our belly that allows us to enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah.
I certainly have enjoyed the last few years with some of the projects I've been involved in.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your next adventure then. So that's becoming a published author. Can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah. So I think when I retired from Virgin Atlantic, you spend 2 years adjusting, first of all, to being in the same time zone.
Yes.
I mean, your sleep patterns and your lifestyle as a long-haul airline pilot are disruptive.
Yeah.
It took 2 years to decompress. And then what I realized was that when I look back, you know, British Caledonian Airways, British Aerospace, Virgin, a lot of what I was part of was actually part of history. Mm-hmm. And I've always had an interest in history. Mm-hmm. So 20 West was the book that I published first of all. And the reason for publishing it was it covers, and it says on the title, a journey through six decades of turbulent change within aviation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to capture a snapshot of some of the experiences, but more importantly, the people, because it's not just about airplanes.
No.
It's about people.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate to fly and work with some very, very competent, very, very capable people within the industry and have some experiences. There is tragedy in anything associated with an industry such as aviation, but I wanted to capture the good part as well.
Yeah.
And that was the inspiration.
Absolutely. That's brilliant. And I've got to be honest, I've got a copy of this book, which you kindly gave me. I haven't yet got through it, so I'm not going to tell anybody what's in it or anything like that, spoil it. But we did have this idea, didn't we, that we could get you back on the show to read some of your books.
Yes.
To the listeners.
Yeah.
Only parts of them anyway.
Yeah, I think I'd be more than happy to do that, because in addition to writing 20 West, I wrote for Aviation Business Magazine in Middle East, and also have had some work published in the States, Airfax Journal, and some various blogs. So what I did was I pulled these together into Flight Envelopes, which is a collection of opinion pieces, both engineering, flight operations, aerospace, and even space, which has been interesting because what it does do is it stimulates debate and discussion.
Yes.
I've always said that if you put five pilots in a room, you'll have 10 opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's Flight Envelopes.
That's like our instructor meeting. But so what we're going to do is we're going to just do like a couple of chapters, I think, wasn't it? From, one from each book. And then within the show notes of this podcast, there are links where you can purchase the books, both books that are there. Sorry, we have got aeroplanes in the background, but we are at an airport, believe it or not. So we'll put those in the show notes.
One thing I'll add, if I may, is that Flight Envelopes is on a winter special, 99 pence. That's on ebooks. So Kindle and Apple Books have been loaded with the Flight Envelopes, and in euros it's also 99 cents.
Excellent. Can you tell viewers as well where they can find you on social media, Steve?
Yes, certainly. So I do have a website, which is 20westbook.com, and that's 20westbook.com. Mm-hmm. On Instagram, it's Steve, obviously lowercase, and then underscore Ford underscore author. So that's Steve underscore Ford underscore author.
Yeah.
And also on YouTube, 20 West Book, and also on Facebook, which is 20 West Book.
Brilliant. So thank you ever so much, Steve, for coming onto the show and sharing your journey with us. It's an incredible journey. But you guys can find a lot more about Steve on social media and by reading his books. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe to the channel, ding the bell for more notifications for the next episode. And please do, if you get a chance, leave us a review. It really does help us grow the channel. And also get a copy of Steve's books. They're excellent.
If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and ding the bell to receive notifications of the next episode.